everyone. December 30th, flight plan Friday. This is it. Welcome to NYJ Ground Crew. I'm your host and crew chief, A.M. Pfeffer. Joining me as always, reporting from Jets Universe, Johnny Jets.
Hello, Jets Universe.
And today, joining us as well, Kyle Smith. Kyle, been in the game since 2015, had his own podcast for a little while with his brother, now often seen on Blewett Blitz with Joe Blewett. And he's got a lot to say. He's got a lot to tell us today. We're very excited that he's here. Thank you for joining us, Kyle.
Well, thank you, Johnny. And do you go by Aaron or you want me to go by AM?
Oh, I like AM. You know, that's my alter ego. Okay. I mean, I'll respond to Aaron, but AM if I could.
AM sounds cooler, if I'm being honest. Well, I'm doing pretty good, guys. I mean, you know, listen, four losses in a row, late season collapse. I mean, we're used to it as the Jets, but as Jets fans. But, you know, aside from that, I guess I'm doing okay. I mean, we did get a Christmas present with, you know, getting some much needed losses from teams we needed to lose, especially those Miami Dolphins. Man, that was so fun on Christmas. But doing good, all things considered. I'll be doing a lot better if they actually go out and don't, you know, don't poop the bed against the Seattle Seahawks, the Geno Smith led Seattle Seahawks. Who would have thought, right? I didn't see this season coming from him. But yeah, I'm looking forward to talking with you guys. And thank you for asking me to come on your show. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, we greatly appreciate you being here. Before we get into it, we are going to talk a lot of Jets football today, as usual, as always. But let's hear about you for one quick second. You've played a little football yourself, right? You were in high school. Did you play in college as well?
I did. I'm not going to act like I was a great player or anything like that. You know, I'm not super athletic. Joe Blewett likes to make fun of me, the way I throw the football. You know, sometimes we'll do a tailgate and, you know, I can't throw to save my life. He can't either. But I'm not a great athlete. And even for the position I played, you know, I started offensive tackle and defensive end in high school. And then I played defensive end in college. But I was undersized and I wasn't super athletic either. So, you know, it's hard to be a good defensive end at the collegiate level when you're 6'1 in the 220s and you're not particularly fast, which I was. But I definitely played hard, you know, whistle to whistle, you know, no nonsense type of guy. So, you know, listen, I was captain of my high school team. You know, we were pretty good. We played in a state championship game. I'm doing the air quotes because in New Jersey, there's like, at least when I was in high school, there's like 19 different state champions because like they don't have like a tournament of champions or whatever, because I guess the season would just be too long. But we did play in a state championship game at Giant Stadium, which we ended up losing. But, you know, it was still a good memory overall. I mean, just to get there, I guess, is pretty cool.
Oh, that's amazing, man. The old Meadowlands. Hey, you put on the pads. You got our respect. I promise you that. Johnny, you ever put on pads?
Yeah, I played football.
Yeah, you did. I could look at you.
Look at my face.
just look where we all ended up. But that's cool, man. And the fact that you got to play at Giant Stadium. But just out of curiosity, in that game, how many people do you think were in the stands watching?
It's funny because they just sectioned off very finite amount of chairs because so you got this whole big stadium and it's like so empty. I would say that I don't even think there was 1,000 in the stadium. I would say in the hundreds, you know, could be over 500, but I don't think much more than that.
Hey, that's enough. It's better than five. And your fandom dates back, I think we were talking right before the show, to the Rex Ryan era, right? I mean, he came on the scene in 09 and you got excited.
Yeah, so I was a lifelong Jets fan. And what's funny is I was telling you pre-show about how my brother's a diehard Buffalo Bills fan and has been pretty much his whole life. But my dad is a diehard Kansas City Chiefs fan, and he always has been as well. And he
What's going on in that family, man?
Yeah, what is going on in the family? And which, by the way, if we make the playoffs, I think Kansas City is going to be the second seed, which means we would go to Kansas City. I'm definitely going to be going to that game with my father because last year I went to the divisional playoff game, Bills at Chiefs, and that was one of the greatest games of all time. So I definitely got to go back there if the Jets can make it. But yeah, my dad, even though he was a Chiefs fan, he used to work with a bunch of Jets fans and they would give him like, you know, some memorabilia. They would give him like, you know, programs and stuff and like Jets yearbooks or whatever. And my dad would give this stuff to me. And being that we lived in the area, like, you know, my dad would take me to like Sports Authority or Modell's, and they didn't have Chiefs jerseys or whatever, but they had Jets stuff. So my dad, the Jets were always kind of like his second team. So being that he gave me all this stuff, I became a Jets fan. But man, Kind of wishing that I became a Chiefs fan right now because. Oh, yeah.
Whoa, easy. I mean, you know.
Hey, listen, man.
That's Patrick Mahomes territory. Yeah, but I think all of us, we've had our moments, right? We've all sat there in the dark, clicking on a light here and there, and thought about another fan base once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my wife tells me, like, the team makes you so miserable. You know, why don't you just switch and be a fan of another team? I'm like, it doesn't work like that, man.
Even if you wanted to,
I just can't, like, switch my fandom and start rooting for another team. It would just, first of all, you'd be a traitor. But second of all, it would not feel right inside rooting for another team. I mean, I guess some people do that, but I could never.
I moved to Denver, Colorado out of Westchester County in 1993. And it was within a few years that the Broncos were phenomenal, right? And then Elway, you know, at the end of his career, Super Bowl runs, all of that. Never for a second did I think about becoming a Broncos fan. Hated that team, right? Been in Los Angeles over 22 years at this point. You know, the Rams are back. The Chargers are here now. Don't even talk to me about it, right? It's Jets through and through. I mean, it's part of the reason I had to start this podcast, you know, to keep myself just on the straight and narrow and all of that. All right, Johnny, bring us.
I think the Jets and Broncos played each other week one in 93. Isn't that correct? And that go to overtime 25-22, and the Broncos won that game at Giant Stadium. Oh, technical difficulty.
Whoa, look at that. Your screen is falling down. You're asking me if that's correct. I mean, I'm going to just say it's correct because you said it, and I've never seen you miss. So you know.
Well, I was at the game. Remember,
the week one game of the 93 season.
He rattled off the score, too. Like, it was, like, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. I do, of course, remember 98, you know, the AFC Championship game, which, unfortunately, I did not get to go to. We'll get Johnny back in a minute. He's fixing his screen there. But I wanted him to be the one to kind of give us the rundown of where we stand in the playoff picture. I think it's pretty easy and simple. Most Jets fans know by now. But I'm kind of curious who else could potentially sneak in, right? I mean, we know it's the Patriots, the Dolphins, and us. But I think there is a road for Pittsburgh if there's a few ties. Kyle, are you aware of this? Or maybe Johnny can enlighten you.
Johnny's going to have to bring us up on that. I mean, I know that – so Pittsburgh, do they have 6 wins at the moment?
7. They're also 7-8. Yeah. Okay. I mean, obviously, we win the tiebreaker.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was just about to say. So, Johnny, he's back now. Yeah, I guess he can.
Johnny, tell what's going on with Pittsburgh? How do they get into the playoffs? The Steelers.
Yeah, it does involve a lot of ties. It also involves the Jets losing, the Patriots losing, I think, and the Steelers winning out. And it's unlikely. What's most important is that the Jets win the game against the Seahawks this Sunday. If they don't win that game, then almost certainly the Jets won't make the playoffs.
Well, let's talk about that game. I mean, let's just jump right into it now that we're here, right? Okay, so 1.5-point favorites, as we are, and I've seen 2 on some different sites, and you've got an over-under to 42.5. But here we go. We're going into Seattle, right? Mike White's back, and we're going in 1.5, maybe 2-point favorites. And this is interesting to me because throughout the season, a lot of times when you've seen we've been favored, other than the Jacksonville game, which was always strange to me why we were even 1-point favorites. I'm not quite sure what was going on there. For the most part, we've been playing these backup quarterbacks, whatever it is. But Seattle should have their complete team. Tyler Lockett's supposed to come back. Geno's still at the helm, having a great season, Pro Bowl season. And here we are going in as 2-point favorites. Johnny, what do we make of this?
I think we were ultimately favorites when we played at Denver, right? Isn't that when Russell
Wilson was against Ridley, right? So I'm saying you're going in and playing a backup. Very different.
Well, I mean, I think it's a question of whether the Jets team shows up ready to play and whether Robert Saleh coaches a good game, and obviously whether Mike White stays in the game. And if he doesn't, whether Joe Flacco has been prepared to come in as the backup and play football. You know, I think Joe Flacco has known the whole week that he will be the backup. And if something happens to Mike White, which could, because Mike White already has an injury, it won't come as a shock to Joe Flacco, and that would allow Joe Flacco to win the game for the Jets. But they come out flat like they did against the Jaguars, and it's going to be a nightmare. If Robert Saleh makes mistakes like he's done the last couple of games, then the Jets aren't going to win. The Seahawks have the same thing to play for that the Jets do, which is, you know, they need to win the game to make the playoffs, I believe. And you know, I think that's really the story of the game.
Kyle, how you feeling going up there?
I have a sneaking feeling that the Jets are going to screw up either this week or the following week. I have a feeling that they're going to miss the playoffs, unfortunately, which if you asked me a couple weeks ago, I would say that they had a good chance to make it. But I feel that this game is more winnable than the Dolphins game, although I think that one's very winnable too. Regardless, I know that Geno Smith has really kind of turned his career around, and you know, maybe some people should be happy for him for that. I still feel like he's still Geno Smith and he's still prone to make mistakes. And I haven't watched a ton of him this year, but when I have watched him, I was watching him play the Raiders probably about a month or so ago, and he had a red zone interception. I'm like, oh, well, you know, he still looks like Geno right there. I still think he's a pretty flawed quarterback. I think they have some talent on this roster, but if you look at that defense top to bottom, I don't think they're very good, and they are missing Jamal Adams, who obviously, you know, he's tied to a ton of their cap. You know, the running game for the Jets has been non-existent since the Bills game. Where is that going to be? Because I think that they're going to need to have a balanced attack. I think this is a very winnable game, and I did predict on our stream last night that I think the Jets will win something like 27-21. The offense definitely plays a lot better with Mike White in there. I mean, him versus Zach Wilson, I hate to say it, but it's just the gap is so big right now.
Yeah, it's incomparable. I mean, it's and obviously you talk about
when Zach
game.
Wilson is the quarterback, then the opposing defense doesn't have to defend against the pass, right? So they've been stacking the box against the Jets when Zach Wilson is the quarterback. Now that you have Mike White, you have a competent football player quarterback who can have a passing game. The Seahawks defense is going to have to respect the Jets passing game to the extent that that should open up things for the Jets running game on Sunday.
So both of these teams have lost five of the last six, right? I mean, and both of them were in great position to make the playoffs just the six games ago, including ourselves, you know. And but you look at, we've been through the ringer, right? We've had a lot of drama with Zach. You've had Mike White get hurt, obviously. You can't even turn to Flacco to think about it. And they've had Geno this whole time. But talking about Geno, let's just look at his numbers for a quick second, right? He's worth diving into. He's eighth in total yards. He's tied for fourth with 27 TDs. And he's fifth in QBR this year, which is good. What's his kryptonite? The blitz, right? We know this. I mean, that's still where Geno is Geno, because if you can blitz him and put a little pressure on him that way, not just giving him not necessarily the pressure look or the cover one, you know, it's more about just actually putting a blitzer on him. Problem is, we don't like to blitz. So the question is, are we going to blitz this weekend? Are we going to put that fifth and sixth guy in the backfield?
It's a good question. I don't think that they're going to blitz a lot. That's just not what they do. Jets personnel, I mean, Quan Alexander's not a bad blitzer. They just don't blitz him a lot. I mean, part of it is he's not on the field as some of these other guys. He's not on the field as Quincy as much. He's not on the field as CJ Mosley enough. CJ Mosley, who is a good, solid player overall, you'd be hard-pressed to find 10 inside linebackers that you could definitely say are better than him. But he's not a good blitzer. That is the weakest part of his game.
Yeah.
Quincy, they don't even blitz him a ton either. So I just Robert Saleh and Jeff Ulbricht, one thing about them is they pretty much stick to what they're comfortable with week in, week out. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I can't see them drastically changing their game plan and blitzing a lot this week, even though Geno has struggled in his career against blitzes.
So when you're saying that Saleh and Ulbricht stick to what they're comfortable with, are you saying that they're reluctant to make adjustments in game during the course of a game?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's just like, I mean, it's always, you know, listen, four down rushers, you know, and we're going to try to create pressure with our front four, and we don't do it by a blitz. And it's been that way for 20 something straight games now, you know, going or 30 something straight games now under them. So, the difference is between this year and last year is they've been getting so much more pressure from those front four looks, right? Like Quinnen Williams he's an absolute monster this year, which yes. You know, I've been known for being very critical of Quinnen Williams because I saw the college tape. I saw how dominant he was. And honestly, for even his second year, which was his second best year, he was good. He wasn't great. But he's taken another step this year. So he's an absolute monster. Carl Lawson didn't have him last year, even though, like, I don't know, he might be a little overrated and he certainly hasn't lived up to his salary, but he's a better pass rusher. Bryce Huff, when he plays, he's a really good rusher. And then you're getting, you know, some other guys like, you know, Clemens. The point is they have a better pass rush rotation this year, and they're more effective at getting to the quarterback with those guys. They're not like, see, Rex Ryan, you know, he never had any pass rushers, but he kind of liked it that way because he liked to kind of view himself as the genius that could cook up all these blitzes and get to the quarterback from his scheme. Mm-hmm. So in terms of in-game adjustments, yeah, I mean, like, they are a little stubborn in that way too. But anyway, we can move on to something else unless you guys have something more on that.
Johnny, is there anything you want to add more on? You think we'll see more of the blitz, or are we just going to keep seeing that four-man rotation?
Well, I mean, obviously, if the Seahawks come out with an offense that the Jets' defense is not stopping sufficiently, then I would hope that Salah and Albrecht would have the ability to make an adjustment.
Yeah, and look, I mean, again, give them credit because that's one of the things they've done well in the second half, at least up until the last three or four games. They were doing some pretty solid adjustments. Let's just hope it's not a runaway in the first half. But speaking of, again, going back, you're talking about now 1.5 or 2-point favorite. You're talking about a 42.5 over under. But here's what's interesting to me. Article came out yesterday on ESPN, okay? Some sort of FPI ranking. I don't know if you guys saw this, right? Whatever index that they use, and they ran a number of simulations, and this is what they came up with. This is where we are. And the Jets, you could see in there, for whatever reason, the projected score of week 17, this one really jumped out at me. Seahawks 13, Jets 6. So yeah, they do not think the Jets would make in the playoffs. They had Miami penciled in there. But then the following week, again, 19-17. Now the Jets give up just under 19 points a game. So, okay, fine. On the defensive side of the ball, we're stopping these two teams from really putting too much up. And who knows if Tua is going to be there in that second week. But 13-6, where are we coming with this? On a 42.5 point favorite, you got Mike White back, a very different look. What do we think? Kyle, you buying this?
6 points, I can't see that. I mean, like, how much of this is based off of how many points they put up last week in a rainy game against the Jaguars on a short week with no Mike White? How much of it is based on that? I mean, these simulations, I don't know, they're always kind of weird, and I don't, what are they basing their data on? But I mean, let's try to think about it. So Mike White, he started how many games for the Jets? And every game that he's played significant time in, and granted, that Colts game, you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt because he might only played a quarter in that game or whatever it was. But other than that Bills game, the team has always put up points and moved the ball quite well with Mike White. And this Seahawks defense has to be one of, I would say, probably one of the worst defenses that the Jets have gone up against this year. So I do not see the Jets being held to only 6 points.
Do you think any of this has to do with the fact that Carroll and Salah are so familiar with each other and they're giving the edge to Carroll on this?
It could be. But I mean, like they're familiar with each other, but like they're both defensive guys, right? I mean, and it's going against the Shanahan scheme. I mean, like there's a lot to be said. I know that, Kyle Shanahan, he said that one of the reasons why he hired Robert Saleh was that he's an offensive genius in his own right. He said that Seattle high number cover three, and they ran a lot of cover one back in the day too, when they had Earl Thomas, and he could just be that guy in the middle of the field that could just basically cover any distance. He said that was one of the hardest defenses to beat. Quandre Diggs is a good safety, but he's no Earl Thomas. So I mean, like, yeah, there's familiarity there, and I know that the Carroll defenses as of old were highly respected, but if we're being honest, Seattle hasn't had a dominant defense in many years. And yeah, there's familiarity there, but I mean, there's always familiarity in the NFL. I mean, like, it's such a copycat league that the same coaches are always recycled and just make their way onto different rosters and stuff. I don't think that this simulation is probably, you know, too much of that. I have no idea what the hell they're basing it on.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the same simulation. Look, Miami, New England, Patriots 13, Dolphins 10. That's an interesting one, certainly. But it's really go to the top, right? Dallas, Tennessee. Game's already been played, okay? But they were right about the Titans. Put up those 13 points, but Cowboys put up 27. Not
so interesting.
Johnny, 6 points. Do you see us scoring more? Do you see us scoring a lot more than that?
I mean, I don't know what the computer is looking at. It might be looking at, you know, the Zach Wilson-led Jets. Or it might be factoring in that, you know, Mike White is going to die in the field. And then, you know, Mike LaFleur, is it Mike LaFleur? Keep reminding me. It's Mike LaFleur.
Which LaFleur do we have?
Yeah. Mike LaFleur is the Jets LaFleur. Mike LaFleur is going to have Mike White pass on every down. And that's going to limit the Jets to having 6 points because, you know, they're going to get away from the running game too quickly. You know, but I think we're going to know, like, to your point about, you know, the first quarter AM, that whether or not this Jets team is showing up on Sunday or not, whether it's going to be like the Jaguars this past Thursday, whether it's going to be like the final game of the year in 93 at the Astrodome when the Jets, you know, after Cary Blanchard missed 3 field goals at Buffalo the week before, everything fell lined up for the Jets. If they beat the Oilers at the Astrodome, that the Jets would make the playoffs, and the Jets did not show up, lost 24-0. You know, if that's obviously different circumstance, it's not the final game of the year, but the Jets do control their old destiny to the extent that if the Jets lose this game on Sunday, then they're not going to make the playoffs. So if it's that kind of game, if it's the kind of game where the Jets, you know, just show nothing, then that's going to be the worst case scenario for all of Jets universe. Jets come out and play. Robert Saleh doesn't make mistakes. Mike LaFleur sticks with the running game and mixes that up with the passing game and allows Mike White to be Mike F and White. Can we say that? Can't remember.
I can say
that. Then we have a chance to win this football game. I think 6 points is egregiously low. I you know, perhaps they're factoring in that this computer thought there was going to be a monsoon, but my understanding is that's going to be in the 40s. There's going to be no weather affecting this game at all.
All right, Mike White, Mike effing White. This man has brought excitement back to the fan base. And, you know, some of us have kind of standing back and been like, Mike effing White is bringing excitement back to the fan base, but maybe he should. And I want to play a game for a second. Like, bear with me because this is going to take a couple of minutes. But, you know, he is an exciting player, first of all. But I was thinking about it. I'm going back in, like, the annals of history, and I'm like, who does he comp out at? Because there's so many fans, obviously, who are already talking about next year. Hey, Carr's benched. Go get him. Bring in Rodgers. Draft this guy, whoever it may be, if we whatever draft position we're in, and, of course, make the trade or whatever it is, of course. But there's 37 free agents out there. Go get, you know, Garoppolo. I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum. People have thought about it ad nauseum. But I'm like, if we stick with White, what are we really talking about? Is there precedence for this in history? Let's play a game. All right? Here we go. I'm gonna break this down, and you're going to tell me who this is. Okay? This is the case for Mike White moving forward. A sixth-round draft pick, okay, taken by one team, by the end of training camp was off that team, was then picked up by another team, and within just a couple weeks – was off that team. And by the end of the year, he was picked up by a third team. Okay. He stuck on that as the third stringer. He stuck on that practice squad. All right. All the rest of that year. He then re-signed the following year and remained that following year as the third string practice squad, all 16 games. Okay. So I'm giving you a hint that obviously it's prior to the 17 game season, which, you know, doesn't tell you much because that hasn't been in effect for too long. But he was there that whole time. The following year after that, he was thrust into action after the team was 0-5, okay? And it wasn't the starter went down early. The second guy got hurt. He comes in, okay? And he then was the start – he was 6-0 the rest of the year himself before he got hurt, okay? But he was 6-0 that year when he came in. The following year, after that, he starts as the second stringer. They no longer had the second stringer. He's the second string guy. He's no longer on the practice squad. He's on the team fully. He's behind the main guy. The main guy goes down in game one, and he steps in game one. And you know what? They go 12-4 the rest of that year, and he becomes the starter after that. He signed a decent three-year contract. He had a middling 3 years over that time, but then he signed – a sizable long-term contract, and unfortunately did not have a good career after that, after he signed that contract. But he absolutely made that team relevant when they were 12-4. He absolutely came in with 6-0. He was a guy, and again, a six-rounder, practice squad guy, all of this. 6'3", 208 pounds. Who am I talking about, and when was it?
Well, Johnny, you're the historian of football.
I was gonna say. At first, I thought you were talking about a guy that used to bag groceries on the side, and then later they made a movie about him. But since I don't know who you're talking about,
he was undrafted. Wasn't
answer.
He?
I'm just gonna go with Vince Evans because he beat the Jets in a horrible game back in back in the '90s when Curtis Martin was hurt. Lamont Jordan started against the Raiders.
Kyle, you want to take a guess who this might be?
Oh, dude, I'm really struggling. When he said sixth round, I was like, oh, he's going to go with Tom Brady, and it's obviously not him for various reasons. Jeff Garcia popped in my mind, but he's not 6'3". So I'm really struggling. Johnny was just alluding to Kurt Warner, I believe, but I think Kurt Warner was undrafted, if I'm not mistaken, so it's not him. I do not know. Please, I am but curious. I want to know.
Here's what's amazing. I'm gonna get now. Now I'm gonna give you both an amazing hint. Number one, Kyle, he was in the same draft as Tom Brady, so
okay,
love that. And number two, Johnny, it's great you mentioned Kurt Warner because not him, same team. And in fact, I'll give you the.
Oh, so Bulger, Mark Bulger.
There you go. It was Kurt who went down, after I think four turnovers or five turnovers, got concussed against the Giants in game one. Bulger came in and they were 12-4. That's when he started that season as the backup after he earned his place doing that. But you're talking about a journeyman who came in as a sixth rounder, practice squad guy, cut a couple times. We know what happened in Dallas, all of that. You know, so exciting stuff. Yeah, Vinny was on it. Mark effing Bulger, Mike effing White. So again, you know, there's this thought process, there's this notion, and I think a stigma of a guy like, you know, Mike, who has to go in and say, oh, he's a fifth round pick, you know, and we can't have that, and we can't move forward with that. Well, why not? He's 5 years in the league, he's paid his dues, and he comes in and he can absolutely play. And you know what? Bulger was a damn good player for a couple of years there. Who's to say he wasn't? And he was 6'3", he was 208. And he had
how about this one? How about this one, AM? This comparison to Mike White, this quarterback dated Jessica Simpson.
Romo.
Another undrafted guy. I thought that'd be a quicker answer.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and all of that. And look, he was from an unheralded school. I'm sorry, was he Northeastern Illinois, right? Didn't Romo play there and all of that? So there's no question that there are guys in there who can come in and play in this league, and they don't have to be. The problem with this league, and we were trying to talk about it last week, and maybe I was making too many points at once, is that you have these guys on rookie contracts. You have all these guys pushed to the first round now. It becomes precedent that they need to be drafted. They're drafted above their weight, Zach Wilson included. You want these guys on rookie contracts. You want to make them great. They shouldn't be in year one or two to begin with. You're trying to see if you've got something with these guys. And if you do, then all of a sudden you're still having the rookie contract. Go spend the money on the free agents, and now you can compete. You don't necessarily need to do that. And if Mike White's the guy, and Mike White can play, and he can go in there, and if he can stay healthy, and that's going to be the big question, you know, and especially if we can get a better offensive line around him, why couldn't he be the guy moving forward?
He absolutely can. The thing is just the sample size is so small. We were talking a lot about this last night. And the other thing you have to factor in is, granted, that hit he took, like, so one thing's for sure is he's really tough. Like, he's shown his willingness to come back into games. But, you know, it is also true that some people, they get hurt easier, bones break, you know, easier, some of their ligaments tear easier. And there is also, okay, so he's played so sparingly, but when he has been in games, he's come out on several occasions. So you do wonder, okay, I don't have a huge sample size of tape on this guy. And as the league gets more used to what he does well, and they know how to, you know, call defenses to combat what he does well. And the fact that, you know, he gets hurt, you know, decently often, it could just be a fluke that he just got hurt. Do you want to bank on that going forward? Like, do you want to give him 25 mil going forward? If he leads the Jets to the playoffs and actually makes a deep run, which is conceivably possible, right? I don't think much people thought the Bengals were going to go as deep as they did last year. Then, you know, it makes a little bit more sense. But, I mean, I think that right now, depending on what you realistically expect, they have to bring in somebody else. But I'd like to see Mike White still be able to compete for the job. And I'd like for him to be on the roster going forward. But, Johnny, what do you think?
No, I completely disagree with everything you've said. I think this nonsense about sample size, I mean, he started enough games in this league and played at a high level of enough games in this league to show that he is a legitimate starting quarterback in the National Football League. The question about Mike White is twofold, and it's not about his ability to play football on the field. It's his ability to stay on the football field with respect to injuries, and it's whether or not the Jets are going to allow him to be the starter of the New York Jets for political reasons, whether it's Zach Wilson or whether they go out next year and they sign another quarterback, whether it's Carr or Garoppolo or trade for Aaron Rodgers or whatever it is that they think that's going to put fannies in the seats more than Mike White. You know, these are the two challenges that Mike White faces. But, you know, in terms of, you know, bringing in another quarterback next year, the one that I'm in favor of, but not to be the starter, but to be the backup to Mike White, given that Mike White will probably get hurt at some point next year, that would be Gardner Minshew. That Gardner Minshew is probably the best backup quarterback in the National Football League. He can come in and lead the team to victory while Mike White recuperates, whether it's just for a couple of plays or whether it's for a couple of games. But to say that there's not enough tape on Mike White, that's propaganda right out of One Jets Drive in Florham Park. And it's the kind of stuff that is the biggest kind of discredit to the Jets fan base.
You didn't disagree with everything I said, because I did.
That's not,
I did
that's
talk
not
about,
true. I, that's
I
not
talked
true.
About I thought, the, I thought about the injury thing, and then you said I disagree with everything
you
said.
Defended against Shaquille O'Neal, the All-State tight end from New Jersey. I thought you had a great game. I completely agree with you on that point.
You know, I want to say something, but Mike White, to talk about the tape, you want to talk about tape. If anybody can do it, if you got NFL Plus, go back and watch the Buffalo game. Go back and watch after we went down 7-0, after we made that big mistake and Mosley had, you know, the terrible offsides. We go down 7-0 and we come back and we've got a tie in the beginning part of that third quarter. Watch with that drive and the pass to the much maligned Berrios along the sidelines outside the numbers and all the other passes in the leading up to the Bam Knight run to the touchdown. That's how you lead a drive. That I hadn't seen anything close to that from Zach Wilson or certainly even from Flacco when he was in. Mike White looked like an unbelievable, perfect starting quarterback, especially in that drive. And there are other times when he looks great, when he sees the field very well, when he's throwing well. And sometimes he's got zip in the middle of the field, and sometimes he's got balloon balls outside the numbers, but it is working. To what we've discussed, the problem with Mike White is that he stands in the pocket too much. He can't bail out, really, and he's going to get hurt. And that's really the issue. So you either have to have that stellar offensive line protecting him, or he's got to figure out how to slide, fall down, move out of the pocket a little bit more, or LaFleur's got to get him moving more next year, because is he going to last 17 games if you're giving this guy $12 to $20 million a year? And before we even get to there, yes, the tape is there and he can do it, but he still, of course, has to go out and look good these next two games. Whether he leads us to the playoffs or not, are his numbers consistent? Is he not the reason that we didn't otherwise make it? Kyle?
Yeah, well, that's going to be a legit question. Yeah, we'll see. I agree with pretty much everything you said there. I mean, the tape is it's so much better than what we've seen from Zach Wilson. One thing I really like about Mike White and his tape is that he – so there's been so much talk about, you know, picking up Derek Carr. But one thing about Derek Carr is that he plays really conservative. And, you know, we were talking about Mike White's toughness and how he'll stand in the pocket and take a shot. And sometimes that's what's required to move the chains on third down. Whereas Derek Carr sometimes will, you know, who's been pretty healthy throughout his career, he'll dirt the ball or throw it out of bounds and live to play another day. Mike White will stand in there and take shots, and he isn't one of these guys who looks to his check down so early. So he looks for the big play first. So you have to really like that about him. But again, it is a small sample size. But anyway, so I'm sorry, AM, your question was what exactly? Because I know I just did not answer it there.
No, it's fine. I mean, I just, you know, do you really ultimately want him or do you want somebody else? I mean, I guess that's really, I just want to ask you pointedly, if you had your druthers, who do you want to see under center next year?
Well, if I had my druthers, I would love for the Jets to make a deep playoff push and for Mike White to be an absolute stud and to say, you know what, this is our own homegrown guy. This is, you know, late round draft pick that we got. It would be a great story. And I would love to say, like, all right, he's the guy going forward. And I would love to give him a contract, but for me, he would have to play so much better than he already has. And he's played fine. He's played good. Like that Vikings game, some people, because they lost the game and there were still some of the Zach supporters saying, oh, well, Zach Wilson's 5-2, blah, 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 blah. There were some people say, well, he didn't win the game. Mike White had some absolute dimes in that game. They did not lose that game because of him. Could he have played a little bit better? Could he have made, you know, certain decisions better? Did he miss a couple throws here or there? Yes, he did. But overall, he was phenomenal in that game. I cannot remember the last time, even like Ryan Fitzpatrick 2015 season. And I know that whatever PFF credited Zach Wilson with having what, 6 big time throws against the Detroit Lions. I'm telling you, I don't know what the stats say with how PFF scored Mike White's big time throws against the Vikings. But if I were to do a grading, Mike White had bigger big-time throws in that Vikings game than Zach Wilson had against the Detroit Lions. I mean, the coverage was much tighter in the Vikings game. In that Lions game, Zach Wilson had players running wide open for a while, and it took him so long before he even saw them. A better defense would have closed on those open receivers sooner. So to answer your question in a very long-winded way, if I had my druthers, Mike White would go out, play even better than he has. He would get the couple extra games of more tape evaluation, despite the fact that that's propaganda straight from One Jets Drive. And he would give me a little bit more of a sample size to be confident that he's the guy moving forward and we would re-sign him. Because, you know, there's a part of me that says, like, Derek Carr, he started, what, hundreds of games at this point in his career? You know what he is. And he's fine. And if you have a really good roster and really good coaching, you can make a deep playoff push, potentially even win a Super Bowl with him. But things need to be going really, really, really well. He's not the guy who's going to really rise your team above what they are. there's a part of me that almost wants to say Mike White does have a higher upside because he plays less conservatively. Like a comparison that I like to make for Derek Carr is that he's like Alex Smith with more arm talent. You know, Alex Smith, you know, he was known throughout his career as being pathologically conservative. And I think Derek Carr has a lot of that to him. Whereas Mike White, you know, being that he's a little bit tougher and he's willing to make the tight window throws, he almost has a higher upside to me, and the fact that he's younger too. So,
you just hit it on the point. Let's talk about Carr for a second. Okay. At best, he's the 10th best quarterback in the league. You're probably not going to see him. There's going to be 9 guys better than him. Okay. Most of the time he's going to fall somewhere between 12 to 15, which is still solid, which is, you know, I think any of us would take that, especially if you're building the roster that you want and the defense that you have. And that's great. The problem is, and you mentioned it, it's age. 32 might as well be 42. Especially with the amount of time he's been under center. And I get it. It's a very different world we live in. You've got a whole different way to rejuvenate your body and to elongate your careers and all of that. It doesn't matter. You look at the numbers on quarterbacks especially. There are very few guys after that age who are going to make that big of a difference or suddenly elevate their careers. I mean, I could think of Rich Gannon on 1 year on the Raiders. Obviously, Tom Brady at 46 years old. Vinny came to us pretty late in his career, and he had some resurgence there. But for the most part, you know, he's a guy on the wrong side of 30 and a couple years on the wrong side of 30. You don't build a team. You don't get better by bringing in guys, especially in that position, who are on the decline. And for the most part, like a point guard, you know, you've taken the hits, you've been there. Most guys at the 32 years old are going to be on the decline. And that's the truth. And it's hard to see, and it's hard to stomach for a lot of people. And yeah, maybe he comes out and he breaks that mold, but that's the reality of the position. By the time they're 34, 35, 36, they're on their way out. And again, I get it. I know that you're watching Rodgers at 38, 39 years old, still doing what he's doing, though he looks, you know, a little bit old. Finally, Brady looks old this year at 46 years old, doesn't want to take a hit. But I wouldn't want to take that risk. And I wouldn't want somebody topping out between 12 and 16 when Mike White can certainly be 12 and 16, you know, quarterback in the league as well. A lot younger, a lot cheaper. Johnny?
Well, I think the reason that Tom Brady doesn't want to take the hit anymore is because Todd Bowles is his coach and he realizes that he can't win the Super Bowl.
Well, that's also a good point. But yeah, I mean, how about this? Because I'm going to throw out this name again. And you know, to me, he's worth the money because he's still young. He can do anything and everything on the field. It really is Lamar to me. I mean, if you're going to have to throw out the $40 to $50 million number and give the long contract, and again, who's to say that it's even going to come? But I would break the bank for him. I would never give away the draft capital. I can't stand the thought of giving away draft capital at all. I mean, unless it's third and fourth round pick later on, not the next year. But don't even talk to me about, you know, first and second round picks and giving away for these guys. I'm just not into it. But I would break the bank for Lamar if you're going to get him in free agency. What do you think, Kyle?
Yeah, that's not happening. As much as many people would like to, and as much as that would be pretty damn fun because Lamar is an exciting player. I mean, if Russell Wilson went for what, 2 firsts and a 2 and then a bunch of, and then like several players and stuff, and maybe another mid to late pick besides that. I mean, like Russell Wilson at 33 went for all that. Lamar Jackson is younger. He won an MVP, which I don't think Russell ever won an MVP. Lamar's going to go for big time like draft capital. I mean, they're going to franchise tag him. He could very well not be a Raven next year, and some team could trade for him, but they're going to have to give up major draft capital. And for me, I'm totally with you. I would pay him if I could get him straight up, but I'm not going to trade all that and then pay him, because when you trade all that draft capital, you're mortgaging your future. But the thing with Lamar is, you know, you were talking about age. Whereas a guy like Carr, who protects himself, who doesn't take a lot of hits because he gets the ball out quick, and you know, he'll take a sack, you know, he'll take an Eli Manning type of sack where he'll lay down in the pocket versus getting crushed. Lamar is different. Lamar runs X amount of times per game. So he's getting hit, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of more times a year than some other quarterbacks. So his longevity is even more in a question. And the thing is Lamar, you know, people don't like when you say this, but he is a little bit of a flawed passer. There's the reason why he went 32nd overall. And when I say he's a flawed passer, I'm not saying he's Tim Tebow or anything like that. He can make a lot of throws and stuff, but you know, if you're asking, you know, some of the outside the numbers type stuff, it's not necessarily his forte. So when Lamar loses his athleticism, you know, what's really the big upside with him? So if you're going to trade away all that draft capital, you have a really finite window to make it work. So that, although exciting, it doesn't interest me too much.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, Johnny, before you make your point, I mean, all I was saying about Lamar, and I agree with you, I wouldn't trade one round, you know, one pick for him is what I'm saying. If they franchise him and that's the case, move on. Don't even look his direction. But if, for whatever reason, and things didn't go that way and he hit that market and there was an opportunity for him to come up, pay him the money without giving away the draft capital. I agree. It's not going to happen. But that's what I'm talking about. And I'm kind of making a point, like, other than that, you might as well stick with White, because you've got these 3,700 quarterbacks out there. I don't want to even think about Jimmy G, who also wrong side of 30, also has a history of getting hurt. He's absolutely not going to make it through 17 games a year. But Carr, and I do want to go back to that for a second. Yeah, he may have taken less hits, and I understand Lamar takes hits. Different player, different style, different offenses in the NFL. Carr at 32, heading, you know, he'll be 32 years old, heading towards 33 years old. It's just a decline of the body, whether you've taken the hits or the not, and decline of the ability and all of that. That's just the reality of it. It's hard at that point for most guys to continue to play well enough. And he's going to top out at your 10th best quarterback. I just don't see the point in him. Johnny?
Yeah, I think rather than sign a free agent quarterback, the last time the fact that Laremy Tunzel was going to be a free agent, the Jets invest the money on that free agency to bolster the offensive line, draft an offensive lineman in the first round, whether they pick 10th or whether they pick 20th, then the quarterback will have more of an opportunity to stay healthy. You know, with a bad offensive line, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is, doesn't matter how mobile or immobile the quarterback is, you know, they're eventually going to get hurt. And a quarterback like Mike White is going to get hurt, you know, more frequently than another quarterback. But if you have a stout offensive line that's competent, even if your guy Mekhi Becton actually plays football next year, you know, you add Laremy Tunzel, you add a first round draft pick, you know, and then maybe instead of drafting a James Morgan in the fourth round, Joe Douglas drafts a serviceable backup guard for the rotation, you know, then all of a sudden the Jets have a good offensive line to go with the rest of the parts of their football team, and Mike White can stay healthy.
Speaking of Tunzel, and Kyle, we want to hear your thoughts on this. You know, he said the other day, I want to be the highest paid left tackle in the game. Don't blame him. How do we make him the highest paid left tackle in the game, keep Quinnen Williams, and keep the parts in place that we ultimately need? What do you think?
I'd love to have him on the team because he is a really good player. And any player wants to be the highest paid guy in the league. And he's a guy who probably should have been like a top two pick in the draft. And, you know, a lot of people were thinking he was going to go number one overall. And then the whole gas mask fiasco happened and he ended up sliding to pick 13. So he did miss out on some money over his career. So there's all the more incentive for him to be one of the top paid guys. Thing is, is he scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent? I'm assuming.
I believe so. Yes.
Okay. The Texans have to franchise tag him at the very least, because they're going to be drafting a quarterback first overall, whoever that may be. And they're going to want to protect that young quarterback, because young quarterbacks have a tendency. They see the field slower. They hold on the ball longer. You don't want the young quarterback to get hit. And, you know, you don't want David Carr 2.0. So I don't see you getting Laremy Tunzel unless you trade major assets to get him. And it would have to be a first round plus, because he's already been traded. And when he was traded, the Dolphins got a first rounder and then some else. Was it two first rounders? I don't even remember, but they got a lot for him. So granted, he's a little bit older now, but he's still on the good side of 30. You know, he's under 30. So I don't think it's realistic for the Jets to make that happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I guess we're going to see who's out there, because they got to make something happen. I mean, it's been a revolving door. I mean, look, let's just talk about it. Dwayne Brown, who is under contract, we have him for 2 years and we paid him big money to come back. And maybe he does. Maybe he comes back and plays well. He hasn't been playing bad this year. He's just been playing on, you know, one wing. And that's the problem. You know, I don't know if Fant's even going to be on the team next year. What do we think? Does George even come back? I mean, everybody was talking before the year, oh, give him the long term deal. We know he was penciled in at left tackle when Mekhi was healthy. And then obviously things changed and all of that. But now he's unhealthy. Is he even going to be on the team next year?
He was certainly a good signing. A lot of people really slept on that signing. You know, what are the Jets doing? So he definitely fulfilled his contract. That was one of Joe Douglas's better signings. But now he's definitely, you know, on the wrong side of 30, and he's had injuries. And sometimes injuries just kind of pile up for offensive linemen, and then they never are able to get back to the level that they're at. And he's a player who, you know, last year he was pretty damn solid in pass protection. Mm-hmm. But he gives you very little in the run game, and the Jets want to be committed to the run game, right? Especially like when at this point, the Jets certainly don't have anything close to an elite quarterback. So the run game needs to be a big staple in order for them to win games. he really doesn't give you much there. He does not move people. So I personally would not bring him back. In his mind, he's probably going to be thinking like, well, when he got his contract from the Jets, 10 plus million a year average, he was kind of an unknown versus now he's got, you know, he started what, 30, 40 something games. And he's going to be like, hey, listen, you know, some team's going to pay me more. So he might want an even bigger contract than what you previously signed him for. I would not bring him back. But the thing is they need help on the offensive line. And, you know, Max Mitchell showed some, you know, positive signs this year, but then his personal matter happened. And I don't know if you guys know more about that. I'm forgetting what his issue was. So they need to do a whole ton on the offensive line because, you know, we were viewing that as maybe being a strength of this team, hopefully coming into the year, even though Mekhi Becton was a big uncertainty. But with AVT going down, with Lakin being a huge disappointment, you know, it seems like they're almost back to square one with the offensive line. They're not exactly, but they got a lot of work to do there.
Well, hopefully Elijah Vera Tucker can come back and play at a high level next year. And obviously the same with the other key injury, this team, Brees Hall. Hopefully his home run ability has not been lost with his injury. But, you know, before we get to next year, we obviously have this game against Sunday against the Seahawks this Sunday. And Kai, I'd like to get your thoughts. If this team comes out flat this Sunday against the Seahawks, the way it did against the Jaguars this past Thursday, in your view, is that an indictment of Robert Saleh as a coach? And what does that mean for the Jets moving forward if they lose this game against the Sunday and blow the playoffs by not showing up?
Yeah, it's a good question. It absolutely would be an indictment because, I mean, like, you were basically gift-wrapped all these losses that you needed. And that should be, if you're a player, you still got, you know, playoffs on your mind. And a lot of these players haven't been to the playoffs in many years. So if the team comes out flat, I mean, it's obviously the head coach is the leader, and Robert Saleh is supposed to be a player's coach. He's supposed to, you know, players love him, and supposedly, and I do think that they love him. But it all starts with him. And, you know, players have to believe in the game plan. They have to think that the game plan is going to work. You know, there's a lot. We have to remember that these guys are young men. And even things like when you're making a big road trip, like, you know, just making sure that you're getting a proper night's sleep and giving them reminders and things like that to rest well, to eat well, you know, making sure that the schedule is going according to plan. I mean, it all starts with Robert Saleh. He's the head coach of the team. So if
that's a very apropos point you're making in light of playing Geno Smith this Sunday, obviously. And if you want to talk about conspiracy theories, if he had forgotten to adjust the time on his watch to California time, he would have arrived at that meeting 3 hours early instead of 6 hours late. So, I've been in the flames of that conspiracy for seven years now.
Remind me what game that was, please.
That was against the Chargers. Out in the Chargers.
And they got shut out that game, right? It was like 37. Yeah,
he said he went to the movies or something because he didn't adjust his watch. But if he failed to adjust his watch, he would still be on New York time. It would be 3 hours early. He wouldn't be 3 hours late.
You know? And that was the 2014 season, right?
Yeah.
2014 season.
That was the game against the home game against Buffalo, where his first three passes were pick sixes.
Which was, oh my gosh, yeah. And by the way, that was Rex Ryan's last season. And eventually, listen, Rex Ryan obviously was very well loved by his players, but losses matter. You keep losing enough, and players eventually, even though they might like you at a point or whatever, eventually they will give up, and you lost four in a row. So if they come out flat, I mean, like, again, it all starts with Robert Saleh. Obviously your season's over, but then it also brings into question what the players think of you going into next year. Right. So it all starts with Robert Saleh. So the team better not come out flat.
Yeah, to your point, the way things lined up with everything being gift wrapped, there is no scenario by which at 4:05 New York time, when the Jets kick off against the Seahawks this Sunday, that the Jets will already have been eliminated from the playoffs. They will still be in playoff contention when the game starts this Sunday. That's because the football gods all delivered, as C.J. Mosley said. And so there's no reason for this Jets not to be completely pumped up and prepared and ready to go 15 rounds against Geno Smith and the Seattle Seahawks.
Jacksonville was the only game we've really seen them come out flat. Sluggish in a few games for sure, offensive out of the ball, but flat, I'll give you. And I don't, you know, but it also sounds like we're preparing for them to come out flat. And as an indictment of Saleh, I'm not expecting them to come out flat at all. And that Thursday game, and as we talked about, it was the only primetime game they had this week. These kids, and you mentioned it, Kyle, these are young men, and they are the baby Jets. hadn't seen what it is to turn around. They've been playing the same time every week on Sunday, and then all of a sudden they got a Thursday night game, and they got their asses whipped, as we know, on primetime television, and they did come out flat. But I think a big part of that was because they knew Zach Wilson was under center again, and nobody wanted to see that, including the team. But these guys, they like Saleh. They play for him. A lot of these guys have come here to play for Saleh. I expect them to be absolutely fired up when we come out on Sunday. I just want to ask one last question, and then we'll wrap this up. Who really needs to step it up? Why don't we pick one player that we each think this time around, up there in Seattle especially, or these last two games, who needs to step it up to be a big difference maker if we're going to make these playoffs? Kyle, we'll start with you.
Okay. Off the top of my head, the first name that came to mind was Laken Tomlinson. Wow, what a disappointment of a signing he has been. Number one, he's supposed to be a leader. And I do think that he's a leader, and, you know, he shows up and works hard every day. But part of what comes with leadership is you have to play well. You know, you could try to be a rah-rah guy giving speeches and giving a message to the team. But if you're playing if you're playing badly week in, week out, eventually players, you know, they're going to ignore what you're saying. And I saw Michael Nania, who, you know, is co-owner of JetsXFactor.com, where I do live streams at. And he put out some chart where he said he rewatched the previous three Jets games, I believe, all 22. And he accounted for who's responsible for the most run stuffs, allowing the most run stuffs over the course of those three games, because the running game has been very bad. And Laken Tomlinson had 11. He was responsible for 11 run stuffs. And, you know, based off my watching of the film, that certainly lines up with it. So we're talking, you know, early January game. It's, you know, we're talking NFL football, cold weather. Well, granted, this game isn't going to be super cold or whatever, but you need to be running the football at this point in the season. And it really starts with Laken Tomlinson. And for him, it's not even just running. Like, in pass, and I'm sure you guys have seen this because these tweets went viral on Jets Twitter. Laken Tomlinson, every couple games, he just has brain farts in terms of pass protection, where, number one, he doesn't pass off stunts properly. Sometimes he overcommits on a stunt, and he will allow a looping defender to completely cross his face and just smack the quarterback right in the face. But then there are some other times where he doesn't even get out of his stance, and he allows somebody to get a quarterback hit. And as a guy who is a, what, 8-year NFL veteran, who's familiar with the scheme, that absolutely cannot happen. So if we're talking one player that needs to step up, he's the name that comes to me first, Laken Tomlinson.
By the way, love it, and couldn't agree more with him, certainly. But if I could brown nose for a second, you mentioned Jets X Factor, Michael Nania, phenomenal. Love every article. I read every article he puts out, Rivka Board, and certainly Vito Paeva, if I'm saying his name correctly. I think that, you know, especially when they're up there, I mean, Bleacher Report constantly, I'm seeing all those articles, and Johnny knows. I've mentioned them a number of times on here. I think they do a phenomenal job and even quoted a lot of the stuff that they do. Really great inside the numbers stuff, and I know you're over there doing the streams as well. So love X Factor. All right, I'm gonna go, and then we'll wrap it up with Johnny. Elijah Moore. Elijah, my man, you're way too talented to be leaving what you are on the field. There's a couple of times and some specific instances, and more to the point, I mean, like, for me, it was that Buffalo game when he had that chance to pick up the first down on that second down catch. I've watched that play now, I think, 8 times, and I still blame him. He just got stuck at the sticks, and he should have had that, and we never should have been in that position to have to kick the field goal right there. We could have scored that touchdown and punched it in. And there are a few other times when he's just not finishing the way that he is. He's not toe-dragging the way that he is. And there are other times when he's phenomenal and the athleticism is on full display. But, I mean, if he just gives that extra 8 to 12%, he is going to be the difference maker. I'm a big fan of his. I really want Elijah Moore to be the guy. I want us to have the tandem of Wilson and Elijah moving forward, because, I mean, he's just incredible. He really is. He showed it last year, and he's done it so many times this year. It's all there. But there are a few times when he has to give 110%. You talk about all gas, no brakes. He is at this point, unfortunately, a few too many breaks for me.
If I can comment a little bit on him for a moment, if you don't mind. Yeah, this is something that I noticed on his Ole Miss tape. And by the way, me and Joe really loved his Ole Miss tape. We thought he should have been a first-round pick. And, you know, I know a lot of people like Daniel Jeremiah also thought he should have been a first-round pick. He's insanely talented, as you said. His route running is extremely good, especially when he knows he's on the front side of a concept and that he knows that he's getting the ball. Sometimes on the back side of a concept, he dogs it. But I notice a couple times every game where he just gives really poor effort, not only in just on route running, but also when it comes to blocking. Now, number one, he's not very big. Mm-hmm. but he doesn't even attempt to block sometimes. There was a 3rd and 10 in this past game against the Jaguars, and we were talking about how the team came out flat. Well, Elijah Moore is an example of a player who kind of came out flat a little bit. There was a 3rd and 10 screen to Michael Carter in this past game. Elijah Moore didn't, and it was on Elijah Moore's side of the field. He didn't even attempt to make a block on the defender who ended up making a tackle on the play. And it's like, listen, you can run a screen on 3rd and 10. You usually won't get it, but there's a chance sometimes, but it needs to be blocked perfectly. And if you're not even attempting to throw a block, what are you doing? So when you're talking like, but that's in his control, right? Like there are certain things Elijah Moore can't control. He can't control if Zach Wilson's going to dirt a football to him on a dig route on 3rd and 10. But your willingness and your effort level on a block, that is something he can control. And if we're talking about a team that's making a playoff push and not coming out flat, yeah, I agree. He's definitely someone who stands out.
Yeah. You said it best. I appreciate it. I appreciate the backup on there because again, just disappointing, right? Not mad at the guy, just disappointed. There's too much talent there. And there's too many times when he looks too good, got to make a big difference. Johnny, who is your player who has to step it up if we are going to make the playoffs in the next two games? Who's going to be the difference maker here? Who's not putting in his weight?
Well, I think before a player can make a difference in this game against the Seahawks on Sunday, which is a quasi-playoff game in the sense that if the Jets lose the game, they don't make the playoffs. So therefore, it is the biggest game in the history of Robert Saleh's head coaching career that the coaches have to come up and play big and coach big. If the team has to show up prepared, that's on Robert Saleh. The defense has to play well, that's on Robert Saleh and Ulbrich. And Michael Ford has to stick to the running game, Mike LaFleur has to stick to the running game. That's on him. If all those things are happening, then I think that the game will come down to a player who has to play big in a way that he hasn't this year because Mike LaFleur overemphasizes him in the passing game way too much, and that's Braxton Berrios. There's going to come a play on Sunday because Mike LaFleur is Mike LaFleur that the ball is going to go to Braxton Berrios, and he's either going to catch it or he's going to drop it. If he catches that ball, the Jets win. He drops the ball, the Jets lose.
Kyle, we're going to end with you here. Your prediction for the game. I don't do predictions. We all know how Johnny feels and what's going to happen in this game. Actually, Johnny, real quickly, what do you think the score is going to be? Not 13-6. What's the score going to be of this game?
I think 13-6 is nonsense. I think that it'll be in the 20s as far, you know, it really depends on whether the Jets show up or not and whether Robert Saleh has a good game coach in the game. I think the Jets can win this game. If they do, it'll be something like, you know, 27,
I didn't hear the rest. You said
27-19, something like that. Yeah, if the Jets win. Yeah.
Kyle, bring us home here.
Yeah, so I actually said last night on our live stream that I think the Jets will win 27-21. Again, just looking at the Seahawks defense on paper, they don't have a ton of players that really stand out and say, oh, wow, I'm really afraid of that player. And I think that you don't want to talk about, like, you know, the Jets kind of like, you know, not really varying their scheme too much. The Seahawks defense, there's a lot of, like, coaches who know way a ton more about the game than me, and they comment that, like, you know, the Seahawks defense, ever since they kind of lost Earl Thomas and him being who he is, they never really gone back there because they try to run a lot of, you know, like, one, they don't do it as much anymore, but, like, you know, one high safety, and it just doesn't work unless you have the personnel to do that. But I don't think that they really have a fancy defense. And, you know, I think some of their players, like Tariq Woolen, like, I think Garrett Wilson can get the best of him. I think he's a little bit overrated. So I think the Jets are going to put up points. I really do. And I think it all starts with Mike White. So I'll say 27-21 Jets. Yeah.
Gentlemen, we like to do a half hour. Kyle Smith, live streaming on X-Pack, and he joins Joe Blewett on Blewett's Blitz at least once a week. We greatly, truly appreciate you coming today. This was amazing. And it was a perfect time, obviously, because we are still in the playoff hunt. We needed a guy like you to come on here and set it all straight and see where we're at. And hopefully, of course, go Jets this game and the next. I am AM Pfeffer for Johnny Jets, for Kyle Smith. This has been Flight Plan Friday. Thank you for joining me. We'll wrap it all again. We'll do it all again this coming Tuesday, right after the Jets win. Thank you, guys.
Goodbye, Jets Universe.
Kyle, thanks, man.
Take care.